WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. There's a lot we don't know about the land before time, but one archaeologist is bringing his fossil lab to Washington Park to help fill in some of those gaps. The space is an opportunity for researchers to study the bones of dinosaurs long gone, and where visitors can get up close and personal with mummified dinosaurs, bones, and the remains of other prehistoric creatures, including Homo sapiens. I sat down with Paul Sereno, paleontologist, archaeologist, professor at University of Chicago, and a National Geographic explorer in residence. He also heads the new fossil lab, which houses dinosaur fossils that he discovers through his own expeditions. And Paul starts with why he's so fascinated by fossils.
Some people are, I call them born paleontologists. They grab onto a stuffed T-Rex. I have some students like that.
Yeah.
That wasn't me.
Oh.
I walked in as a late college student planning to be a studio artist into the dinosaur hall at the American Museum. And I realized suddenly that's what I wanted to do. It's the adventure of it.
Yeah.
The fact that you're trying to walk back in time and visualize something that nobody has seen. That was just so romantically, scientifically, artistically wonderful that I knew that's what I wanted to do, and I went there to study.
And you keep doing it. You keep
doing
studying.
It because the fossil record is like a Pandora's box that's slowly opening, and it's going to be that way. It's opening faster. More creatures are coming out now than ever before, and this is the golden era for the next century. Your children, your children's children, we're going to learn more about world history than ever before.
Yeah. You mentioned the fascination there among your students, but why do you think that there is such a general public interest in dinosaurs, particularly kids, as we know?
Yeah, because I believe it's actually human nature. It's absolutely essential to human nature. One time I was on the stage at National Geographic sitting next to Jane Goodall, and I said, when you look in the chimp's eyes, then you look at a child's eyes, would you say that imagination is, the level of imagination is the key difference? And she nodded. We love to imagine. We as humans are the only species that can imagine time, a lost world, millions of years, the fourth dimension. We're intrigued by that from the moment we're born. I mean, it's literally 2 or 3 years old, and a child is intrigued by looking at a dinosaur skeleton. They can imagine the animal that once was.
You're fantasizing about what it would have been like to exist back in that time as well.
Yeah, because we know time. And dinosaurs, more than anything else, sort of are icons of the past, a past world that we can only imagine and reimagine. We can't go back in time yet.
Yeah.
That's what makes Jurassic Park so unbelievably popular. And I think the discoveries that we're finding today in the science of paleontology is pushing the envelope of what we can know about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that people are interested in their own history, and they're interested in deep history. It's just worldwide.
To that end, how would you say that our understanding of dinosaurs has grown in recent years thanks to new discoveries in research?
Oh, it's really changed radically. So, I mean, first of all, the ground base of the discipline are fossils. And there are more fossils now than when I started as a graduate student. There's more museums now, far more. The bigger collections out west than there is on the East Coast where I studied. And I think more people are getting into paleontology. I have a student that comes from Beverly, okay? The field is growing because we can teach, and I have taught human anatomy. I can teach biology, field geology. I have a degree in geology.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sort of a Cinderella science that can touch on many aspects. We are in museums, colleges, universities, new museums. So the field is alive and well, and I really think that it's a great gateway to all of science because of its hands-on nature.
Well, speaking of fascinating fossils, Chicago's Field Museum recently acquired an Archaeopteryx fossil. I mean, were you excited by that discovery?
Very excited. And Jin May is the paleontologist who studies birds there, Jin May O'Connor. What a find and what an unbelievable... See, this is actually tops in my book, Sue, because of the scientific importance of the specimen. It is just splayed out like... And they didn't know it when they got it. They took a gamble. So this was a specimen. There's only 13 of them, but now Chicago ranks right up with the top two or three as the classic specimens of this intermediate dinosaur bird. It's going to generate studies for decades as we unwrap that specimen. They got it when it was only a couple of bones sticking out of the rock, and they took a gamble. The rest was in there, and boy, was it. It's just laid out like it was designed to be studied.
That is so cool. I mean, did it make you, did it reframe maybe some of your own understandings of dinosaurs?
Students have called up. We have the next youngest bird just after Archaeopteryx. We have specimens in my lab that we have CAT scans. And the comparisons to this oldest bird are absolutely in order now. And it's going to generate PhDs around what it all means. But the transition of birds is one of the greatest evolutionary transitions. It started in Darwin's day when the first Archaeopteryx was found, 1859, 1860. It continues to this day because birds are all around.
Mm-hmm.
They're all around us. And we think of them as so different than something like a tyrannosaur. But in fact, they clearly share a common ancestry. Birds are the descendants. Dinosaurs, in that sense, are with us today, and they're a global radiation. And if we want to understand the biology of something like Tyrannosaurus rex, the first place we go are birds. Like, I'm working on Spinosaurus, which is competing with T-Rex for popularity. And I'm looking at herons and loons, and I have a PhD student from Beverly working on the functional anatomy of the neck of the skull of this dinosaur. Yeah, they really are.
Wow. Are
the ancestors of birds.
And so we're clear that the fossils, the fossil experts, when the museum first acquired this Archaeopteryx fossil back in 2022, it doesn't look like what people might see of it at the Field Museum today.
No, thousands of hours of time. I, in my lab, my new fossil lab, and the Field Museum have the best preparers in the world as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
At needlepoint, thousands of hours were spent tweezing off. You don't want to lose any feather impressions either, tweezing off the matrix off those bones to make it the gorgeous specimen that it is now. It's also been CAT scanned. We can see inside. We can see things that we can't see on the surface, but you want to see as much as you can on the surface without endangering the specimen. So thousands of hours were put in to make it the incredible specimen that it is. And, you know, the fossil lab is, yes, we're being pleasantly inundated with requests from teachers and people to come down because... This gateway science, it's a fossil, it's a lab in a neighborhood. This is a great gateway for teens to get interested and touch scientists, rub shoulders with people who are doing research, get a sense of what it's like to be a scientist is really what it's all about.
Paul, before you moved to Washington Park, this fossil lab was housed at the university. What was that space like?
So that space was called technically called the Accelerator Building. I had a problem on campus about 25 years ago. I ran a big expedition to the Sahara Desert of Africa. And I was so wrapped up in trying to manage that and survive that. I didn't sort of plan on what would happen if I found tons of bone. And I did.
Yeah.
And they were on the way back to campus and I had no lab. So I was adopted by one of Fermi's graduate students who was an older man, but loved fossils. He came from Italy. Fermi is, of course, the founder of the nuclear era. The first nuclear reaction, and he had a lab, and there was some extra space in it. So I moved into Fermi's lab and set up my own dinosaur lab and incubated there for 25 years until that building is coming down on campus. There's no more room on campus. We had to think of something new.
You had to go somewhere.
Yeah, and I adopted Washington Park. Washington Park has adopted me. I found this 104-year-old building, wood arch ceiling, that last used was a car wash. And I said, we're going to make it into a dinosaur wash.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was a building originally built back in 1921. A car wash?
Yeah. And before that, see, when you dig, even under a building, you find things just like we do. And so they dug up the foundation, and they found tanks big as submarines, one filled with gas. This was a taxi stand at one point when Washington Park had 60,000 residents, was home to jazz clubs. There was even 80-year-old gas in one of the tanks.
Oh, my goodness.
Had to be removed to build the current fossil lab.
Oh, my goodness. So then what different qualities then will this new facility offer for you?
I'll tell you what this new facility is. More than just a place for kids and science teachers in Washington Park and far beyond to dream, it's going to be a stepping stone to a big science center that we're going to bring to Washington Park. I can feel it now. Mm. It's not a well-planned idea anymore. It's really going to happen. And so we have big plans because this generation really needs to get involved in science. The fate of the world ultimately depends on the ingenuity of science. Our university is bet on science, big, mm-hmm. bringing us new internets, bringing us all kinds of materials. And we need to then bet on teens as the future scientists of the next generation.
So you're seeing more interest, but you would want to see that increase.
Yeah. We need an incubator space that looks like it would be an incredible attraction to teens. We need an incubator space.
They need
space.
Places to go and be able to touch
Absolutely.
The things.
Out of school, right? After school. The schools are doing a great job, but out of school, after school time, give me a kid, I'll give you a scientist.
I read that there will also be a prep lab. You call it a bone maker space. Talk about that.
Yeah. So this space, it's really wonderful. It has a prep lab with 14 stations. Each station's got the tools to prepare ancient bones. We take in high school students, we take in college students and graduate students and postdocs, and they're all working in the lab on their projects. And then you move into a learning room, which is a clean room. You're mm-hmm. surrounded by all the, and of course we have human skeletons because I've dug up the pre-Egyptians in Africa. We got hundreds of skeletons to work on. And so, yeah, it's a potboiler of interesting work. And to be a part of that, to come in and contribute is enough to turn somebody into a scientist.
A bone maker space. It sounds fascinating. So you're envisioning then community members coming through, so getting their hands dirty, literally?
Yeah. So it's a multifunction space. I opened it up that they adopt me, I adopt them. There's already been two community meetings in there. They come in to meet. I have a projector. We'll have film night in the learning room, surrounded by all this stuff. What mm-hmm. better place to think about what your community needs than a space like that? And so... And Chicago is famous for its mm-hmm. divided neighborhoods, okay?
Yeah.
What we need is a place to build bridges, what the scientists, social scientists call social infrastructure. It's building bridges. That's what happens in this space when you put a lab in a neighborhood. Kids come in, neighborhood community members come in, and you meet them, and good things happen.
Wouldn't that be something if science was the thing that would bring people together?
Well, I really hope it, because this is, science is a lingua franca. Everybody needs science. Everybody loves science. My science is about our history, our deep history, about the gems that the world has given us. Mm-hmm. And there can be nothing more significant, even when you talk about the history of the neighborhood I am now a part of. It's fabulous. We need to preserve this.
You said Washington Park has sort of opened its arms, welcomed you with open arms. Yeah. I want to hear a little bit more about your expeditions. This lab is including new specimens that your team collected in the Sahara Desert in 2022. What else can you tell us about what you found there?
Well, I can tell you that that expedition was a great weight loss program. I should open it up. Not only do you have to get fit for it, but I ended up losing 32 pounds. That gives you some idea, eating as much as I could, how hard we were working. I believe we set an Olympic record. We all estimated how much we had collected. We were all way, way short. 55 tons of dinosaur material are in containers.
I can't even wrap my mind around that.
It,
55 it's tons.
Carved out of rock in the Sahara under 120, 130 degree heat by the most amazing team I've ever put together. 20 kids from Spain, Germany, Italy, United States, Canada, and Niger itself, the country that I'm working in for mm-hmm. 20, 30 years, put together a team and went to the four corners of the desert in that country and found unbelievable things. You're going to see them on the pages of the newspaper later this year. A new Spinosaurus species, new dinosaurs by the dozen, and ancient humans that were living in the middle of a green Sahara. And so very exciting discoveries are headed to the new fossil lab.
So before we go, I mean, if nothing else, what do you want folks to know about this lab and why they should check it out?
Oh, I think that you're going to see a fossil lab like you've never seen if you come down. It really is. And a lab in a neighborhood
That's the part.
I love creating novel things. People will open their eyes and say, you know, maybe this is a clue that we should think about this, because this is going to have a big impact on the teens in that neighborhood.
You're in people's backyards.
Yeah. And I want people to understand this is the beginning, because we have something even more challenging on the way.
Yeah. We'll leave it there for now. Paul Sereno is a paleontologist, archaeologist, and professor at University of Chicago. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're most welcome.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Brenda Ruiz, who also mixed the episode, and it was edited by Dan Tucker. To stay up to date with the stories and news in Chicago, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.